The following podcast is brought to you by the Jonas Podcasting Network, found exclusively at WrestlingWithJonas.com. Hello and welcome to another episode of Wrestling with Jonas. Now, we're not live, so don't go sending in your questions. This is recorded a few days ahead of time, but this is episode 353. And I've got not just one of the best wrestling talents in the UK, but one of the best wrestling talents globally, in my opinion, and many other people's opinions. Millie McKenzie, how are you doing?
Oh, thank you very much for that. I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Like I say, I like to set my guests up with a nice introduction, but we'll find out during the course of this interview why I believe you are one of the very best talents globally, but probably not right now because you are currently out injured. So for maybe two and a bit months now, you've been out with a broken arm. Give us a bit of an injury update, because the last time we saw on X a few days ago, you seemed very frustrated. A different side to Millie McKenzie coming out there, slightly, you know, maybe an angry side of Millie McKenzie. But how is the arm? Give us a bit of an update.
So I broke my scaphoid bone at the end of December, on the 30th of December, at unboxing.
Right.
I wrestled at Eve, I think it was on the 7th of January, and really, I knew I'd done something. My hand was like a balloon and it really hurt. But then after that initial pain, it still hurt. Like if I was in the gym doing something, it would hurt, but it was nothing I couldn't work through. But then when I wrestled, if someone was to touch my hand, like I can't bend my wrist at all, and if someone was to touch my wrist, it was so painful. So I ended up going to the doctors and they said, yeah, you've fractured your wrist. I had a cast on, then I had another cast on for 2 months, and I had that off 2 days ago. Obviously, I couldn't do anything. Get to the doctors and he goes, oh, can you bend your wrist now? And I was like, no, it still really hurts. And he was like, oh, that's not a good sign. And I just, all the happiness started draining away. So I've got this little like splint thing on now, and I've got that on for one more month, and then hopefully it started to heal up, because if it hasn't, then surgery is going to be an option. But obviously, I don't want that. So,
yeah, we're keeping all of our fingers crossed and toes crossed that that this one works and that you get back sooner rather than later. So I won't ask you kind of when you're expecting to come back. It really does depend on whether the break heals properly. When is the soonest you're hoping to be back? Maybe early summertime or sooner than that?
I think it'd be sooner than that. I can't, obviously I'm a full-time professional wrestler. I can't not having any income. I've got my own place and stuff, like only renting obviously, but like I need to pay my bills and I can't keep walking around feeling sorry for myself. So hopefully it won't be too long, but we'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, let's look at more brighter times, because you mentioned about the injury happening on boxing last year, the 30th of December, and you were in action for Pro Wrestling Eve, the Multiverse Rumble. And I'm just going to bring up some pictures, and here you are. Is it Man Like Doreen, or is it Man Like Millie? I mean, I must admit, when the music started, I was fooled a little bit. I thought Doreen was coming out. But it was his good friend Millie, and there we go. But why did you decide to go with Doreen? Because I know the Multiverse Rumble, they're always good fun. An array of wacky gimmicks from past and present and TV and film. And you came out as Malik Doreen, somebody I know you know very well. But what was the decision behind that one?
I just think it's just funny, just a bit like, I didn't know who to be this year, and I was thinking of all these like famous people and all these rest. Obviously I love John Moxley, he's my like, I just love him, I think he's brilliant, but I feel to do him it would be too, I feel it'd be too natural for me. I'd do it, that's what I did when I was like 13 walking around the house. So I thought Doreen is obviously one of my really good friends in wrestling, so I thought right, I'm gonna try and wind him up here. So yeah, I thought it'd be fun to do and I enjoyed it. I've still got his gear in my flat. Sorry Doreen.
I was going to ask, you know, I guess you didn't get any gear made for that show, and he was probably wandering around trying to find his suitcase or something.
Yeah, I said I'd give back, and I have seen him since, but it's still just sat in my car. So sorry, Dries, I will get that to you soon.
Absolutely. But that was a fun match, and won by Lampshade, otherwise known as Nightshade. That was good fun. I had Nightshade on the show in January. But you mentioned Moxley, and I know that one of your highlights of last year would have been this here. Meeting him backstage. I know that you were performing on the day, I think in a tag match alongside Session Moth, but he was there. Now, I think he had a match, and it was Wolverhampton, wasn't it? OTT, their 9th anniversary show against Trent Seven. But I know that he is legit one of your heroes, one of your childhood heroes, one of your wrestling heroes. What did it mean to you to meet up with him, catch up with him, have your photo with him, and maybe spend a bit of time with him? Tell us about it.
It was always my goal when I got in wrestling. I went to a live event with my dad and I made a big like Dean and Stable Ambrose sign. And
there you go.
Yes, I made a big sign and I was on the ramp and he came out first and he came and high-fived me and I was like screaming so excited. And then after his match, he took off his shirt and gave it to me. And even now it makes me tear up because that was the happy, I think that was the happiest point in my life. It's been downhill from that point on. But like, that was the happiest moment. It was my dream had come true. And I thought if I could ever get to the level to be able to thank him for giving me that shirt, then I'll be happy. So that has always been my goal. And obviously to be able to do that when I saw him, I said, right, I've got to play it cool, you know, just calm. And I walked up to him and I was like, I'm really sorry, I just love you, you know, I'm a massive fan and all this. And he was kind of just sat there, like, he was like, whoa, you're making me feel old. And I wish I'd have took it a bit slower because I was very excited. But he was lovely. Like, I walked away and I said, oh, I should have got a photo, really. And then after I wrestled, he was walking down and I said, I'm really sorry, can I just get a photo with you? And I pulled up, like, my phone and that stupid photo of me when I was, like, 13 was on the screen. And I was like, oh, God. And he went, oh. And I was like, all my school friends will think I've made it when they see I've had a photo with you because I used to always go on about you and then had the photo. And then he tapped me on the back and went, well, I guess you've made it now. And I was like, aah!
There we go. There we go.
He was lovely.
What a cool interaction. What a cool story. And what was it about Dean Ambrose back in the day that kind of gravitated towards you? And like I said, this kind of rough, unkempt look, didn't he? And the vest that he would wear down to the ring. But he didn't bleed so often in WWE. That's one thing for sure. But what was it about Dean Ambrose or maybe Moxley nowadays that kind of really kind of fascinates you?
I think I really used to, like, before I even knew indie wrestling was a thing, I found, I don't know how to this day I came across him, but Sami Callihan and John Moxley, they used to tag together. And I saw him then. And then when he debuted, I think on WWE, I don't know if he'd done anything before, but to my knowledge, the Shield came and attacked CM Punk. And CM Punk was also one of my favourites. And I absolutely hated them. I thought, who are these vile people attacking my favourite person? And then as I got to know them, I was like, actually, I do really like The Shield. And then it was just, I think because Dean Ambrose was always a bit more quiet. And I'm not like, I say I'm not a big talker. In real life, I am. But I just get straight to the point. I think, why am I going to tell you what I can do, show you? And I feel like that was kind of similar with him. So I guess I just connected to him, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what a fun story. But another one of your highlights from last year, and I'm going to bring up the pictures now, would have been this here. And your match for the Sendai Girls World Championship. And a hell of a match, hell of an occasion for you. I know that you've got a rich history with Sendai Girls, which we will take a deep dive into. But there you are with the Sendai Girls World Championship and the trophy after the match, looking ever so pleased, having accomplished, you know, what you did on that day. Now, your opponent, Mika Iwata, now I've probably butchered that, but I know that she's, let's say, a famed wrestler over in Sendai Girls and was a wonderful champion for them. But tell us, what did that crowning moment for yourself mean to you? And especially, you know, after the history you've had with Sendai Girls, and I think you possibly became their first ever Triple Crown champion.
It was such a big moment for me career-wise, but more like a personal achievement because, like you say, I think I first went to Japan when I was 18 and I knew nothing. Like, I literally, I'd been abroad before on my own wrestling, but obviously never to like a place like Japan where it's so different, like the culture's so different. And like you say, I won the junior championship, which was incredible. I won the tag championships with Charlie, and then to go and win that championship, it was just such an incredible honour that Miko thought I was capable of being in that position. And it was just, I was so nervous beforehand, and when it was done and I finally had the championship, it was just one of those moments that always will put a smile on my face. There we go.
And there you are with Miko after the match. I can't read Japanese. I don't know what the certificate said, but you both look very, very pleased with that outcome. And obviously it meant an awful lot to you considering your history with the company. But where would you rank that achievement, becoming the Sendai Girls World Champion? Where would you rank that in your list of accomplishments over your career so far, Millie?
I would have to say that is probably one of the top, just because of the sentimental value and the moment of winning the championship, but mainly like when I lost it, I think it was such a moment again. Even I walked backstage and Miko was just stood there crying, and I was like, oh God. And then I started crying, and then we were all crying, and it was like, it was my last day in Japan. So it was just a perfect end to the tour. And it was just a really happy, although obviously I lost the championship, hopefully I'll get it back one day, but it was just a happy moment, like a full circle moment. That, and I was just happy that Miko saw something in me when I was 17-18 training. I didn't really know what I was doing, and now that she's trusted me and we now are real life friends, and I do see her outside of wrestling, it's just nice that all came from that one moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was at the ballroom for Progress's first show of the year, Heavy Metal, and that epic cage match, and such a wonderful show. And that would have been maybe just over a month ago, back end of January now, or maybe last month, as a matter of fact, February. I'm sure people are going to correct me in the comments. But and to my surprise, Miko was there, wasn't she, watching from the gallery, from the VIP balcony. I did have a brief conversation with her after the show, and I know you did as well. She told me that her favourite match was the cage match, but you had a little bit of a reconnection, bit of interaction with Miko. Was it good to catch up?
It was. She's so funny. I think, as I said, now over the years, I've got to know her personality, because when I first started going to Japan, she didn't speak much English, and obviously I spoke no Japanese. And it was just funny sometimes, the miscommunication. Like there's so many stories where we thought, like me and Charlie once thought we were going to the hot springs, was in the translator. Hot springs, no idea what that is. And it was like a naked swimming baths. You know, like little moments like that, and it's like, yeah. Oh, here we go. But now obviously I can actually have a conversation with her, and she is my friend, and she's actually so funny.
Yeah. And you mentioned going over to Japan at 18, but I think, would your first interaction with Miko, would that have been over in Germany, maybe that same year, 2018, for WXW? And I think you wrestled Miko over in Germany. Would that have been your first match, maybe your first interaction, or one of your first interactions with Miko back then?
The first interaction I had with her is she used to come, I don't know, again, whether she was on the Fight Club show, but she was over in Wolverhampton for a period of time, and she used to come and watch training and take training sometimes. And she pulled my coach aside and said that she saw something in me and asked me if I wanted to go to Japan. I think I did the first tour for 2 weeks, and then I wrestled her in Germany. And then I swear I wrestled her in Germany. Then I ended up wrestling her in Japan, in the UK, all over. I had a few matches with her, so I'm so lucky to get to do that, because she's just an incredible person inside and outside the ring.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned one of your first tours, and I've got some pictures here from some of your early tours, and I think that was possibly one of your early tours when you embraced Miko, but winning the Sendai Girls Junior Championship back in 2018. Now we're talking probably getting on for 6 years ago now, and you would have been 18 years old, and there you are, fantastic looking belt. And of course, I think on your second tour, 2019, winning the tag titles alongside Charlie Evans, the Medusa Complex, some fantastic pictures there, some good memories. Well, I say some good memories, they must be good memories. Bring that fond memories for you.
Yeah, it was such a lovely, lovely time in my life. And being in Japan is incredible. Like, to be able to do that at the age I was, I'll always be grateful for that opportunity. But to be able to do it with someone that's one of your best friends, it was just so funny. Like, and it just, Charlie, he's just a role model to me inside and outside the ring again. I think she's an incredible person and I look up to her in so many ways. I just think she's, spending that time with her made me grow as a person, just like idolizing her, really. It was just incredible. We had lots of nice vegan food as well, which was nice in Japan, which I didn't even think had vegan food at the time. So yeah, it was great.
That's really awesome. And like I say, you was out there 2018, 2019, but then you didn't return to Japan until 3 years later, 2022. I think you was back out there next. You must have missed the country. Was it nice to go back after that long absence?
It was, because now it is like a home away from home. It really is. So it was so nice to see all the girls. And like, there's a little young girl. She's probably, well, I think, how old is she now? I think she's like 17. Her name's Manami. And I've seen her grow up every time I've gone, bless her. And she's a young lady now, I should say. And it's just mad to see these people grow up and they become friends. And like, they are like my family over there. And I do really miss them. I do. But hopefully I'll see them.
Let me ask you then, you've been out there a good handful of times from 2018 through to 2023. How is your Japanese? Have you kind of taken lessons, or do you just, is it not pidgin English, but pidgin Japanese, just certain words here and there? How is your Japanese and your love for the culture?
I love the culture. I love the food. I love everything about it. I think it's so respectful. I think the past few tours I've done, I've picked up the language more and more. And I tell you, people may knock this, but I think the best place to learn the language is in the pub in Japan, because people will try to speak to you. People always speak to you. And I was like, try and speak to them. And obviously they speak a little bit of English normally, so you have enough to get a conversation with them. And there's a pub that I always go to that does the best Guinness. If you like Guinness, oh, it's called The Swan. And it's in Sendai, and the owner of the pub put in the translator. There's so many things that I want to say to you, but I can't. I don't know how. And that really upset me. So me and my friend, we made sure that when we went back there, we would learn a little bit, just enough to be able to have a conversation with him. So that was nice. But I know enough to get by. I can order myself a drink and food, you know, the important stuff and all the like polite phrases, but that's all I know, really.
There we go. So if you want to learn a language, the best place to go is the pub.
Yeah. Words of advice from me.
Love it. Absolutely love it. One of the places that we kind of worked together at last year would have been the Spinebuster tapings from the House of Pain gym in Nottingham. Styx's gym, of course, wonderful group of people down there, wonderful gym, wonderful recruits and trainer, of course. One of the matches that really stood out to me was your match against Sapphire Reed. And now I think at the time that was your first ever match against Sapphire Reed. And I think a lot of people would draw comparisons between yourself and Sapphire, especially with her being very young, a lot of success, doing a lot of international traveling like you did at her age. I know you've gone on to face her a few other times since then, but take us back to that match. Was it interesting to have that first time encounter with Sapphire?
Yeah, it was. And while we're on this Spinebuster topic, I've got to mention Andy Ward. He is incredible. He puts so much work in with Spinebuster. So anyone who gets the opportunity to watch those shows, they're all on YouTube. So there's some great matches on there. So
100%.
Then watch. But yeah, me and Sapphire, yeah, that was our first match together. And it was interesting because I'd had a few people message me on her behalf saying how much like she looked up to me, but she was being shy, and now she's one of my mates. But yeah, it was really, I think we clicked instantly in the ring. It was like, I feel like it is the closest thing to wrestling myself, maybe, how I would have seen myself a few years ago. So it was great. I think she's incredible. I've spent a lot of time with her, really, especially we went to Dubai together last year to wrestle over there. And that was incredible. And it's I'm really excited to watch her grow as a wrestler. Oh,
on the back of a camel there, Millie. I've never ridden a camel, but I've got to say, it doesn't look very comfortable. How was it over there? It looked like you had a ton of fun.
Oh, it was brilliant. We were there for 4 days. Well, I was there for 4 days and we only wrestled once. It was incredible to get to wrestle in Dubai. I never, ever, ever thought like 14-year-old me would be wrestling in Japan or Dubai. I didn't even know wrestling existed over there. It's just incredible. The things you see and the people you meet, like, I'll always, always be grateful for that.
Absolutely. And sticking with the subject of Sapphire Reed, and she was the Pro Wrestling Eve champion up until beginning of the year. I think Nina Samuels took the championship off her. But the Pro Wrestling Eve, I mean, Pro Wrestling Eve as a company, I know, is a company that's very, very close to your heart. You've wrestled for them possibly since about 2018, again, to be honest with you. And I think you've achieved so much in there, had some great opportunities, some great matches. But the Pro Wrestling Eve title is one that's eluded you all this time, Millie.
Yes. Yes, I am aware of that. Thank you for that one in.
Well, I wasn't rubbing it in, but it's kind of like, I mean, it was an interesting fact when I was doing my research that you've done so much with them, but you haven't quite had the bite of the cherry of the Eve title. But it must be one of those titles that, you know, it's kind of, you know, you've got the bit between your teeth. You really want one of those Pro Wrestling Eve titles somewhere down the line. It must be one of those.
Yeah, it is definitely one of those championships. I feel that I've gone for it so many times. It's the same with the Progress Championship. I feel that I've wrestled for the championship so many times and I'll just lose every single time. So, you know, there will be one time. I think if I win, I think it'd be like an accidental, like, mistake or something.
They forgot to kick out.
Yeah. But no, I would hope that one day the opportunity comes. But there's just so much talent now. Like, it's just great to see everyone getting their moment. You know, I'm happy to see other people. You know, maybe not Nina Samuel, she's unkind. But like, just, yeah, I've had so many great opportunities in Pro Wrestling Eve, and I've done so many things. I feel that although I haven't had the championship, I won the she won, the big apple core. Thanks, Dan.
Yeah, you won the she won. What was that, 2019? Yeah. You were their tag team champions in 2020, if I'm not mistaken. Sticking with Eve, though, and 2023, I mean, just look at some of the matches that you had there. Emerson Jane at Wrestle Queendom, which was a phenomenal match. Your matches with and against Alex Windsor, the Absolute Chaos match in November, and not forgetting the 30-minute Iron Woman match against Miyu Yamashita. I think I pronounced that right, from June, was another masterclass. I think you also wrestled Miyu back in November the previous year. But to 2023 in Pro Wrestling Eve, although you didn't get the big one, was a pretty special year for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And as I said, it's a company that I hold close to my heart, not for just the things that the opportunities they've given me, but just it's like family again, the people. I feel that is, I've grown up in that promotion. The fans, as well as the wrestlers, have seen me grown up. And I say grown up, I'm still a child and I'm still immature, but it's just, it's mad when I actually think back to the Res Gal and we seem to be there every month and how much it has changed, but the people just stay the same. It's just such a supportive backstage environment. And I've got to thank Dan for giving me some of the opportunities he has match-wise, because I've wrestled some of the best wrestlers in the world on his show. So thanks, Dan. There's your compliment for their yearly compliment.
Talk to us about this one here, though. I think this is possibly your match against Miyu, the 30-minute Iron Woman match. Like you say, I'm quite squeamish at the best of times. That blood is not doing anything for me. There you are after the match. At the time, she was the Pro Wrestling Eve champion. That's Miyu, of course. A match, probably one of your fondest matches or fondest memories from 2023. But that match alone against Miyu, the occasion, the drama, the action, the stipulation, it just had everything, didn't it?
Yeah, it's like, I'm pretty sure that was my first Iron Woman match. I'd never been in a match like that. So I wasn't really sure what was going to happen. I'd wrestled Miyu before and we had a best of three. And I can't remember... I've got the memory of a fish, I do apologise. I can't remember if that was the last one or the second one, because I wrestled her in Spain, I wrestled her in England, and I wrestled her in Japan. I can't remember if this was the last one, but anyway, it must have been. But it was just brilliant. And as I said, it was 30 minutes and she was just so incredible to work with. But it was just so much improvising, like 30 minutes. I said, 30 minutes of a match, I will not be able to think of a structure in my head. I said, we're just going to have to feel it in there. Like,
how do you remember a 30-minute match? It's crazy.
Yeah. Like, I think it's just instinct. And that's where I'm lucky. I've done it for so long. And Mia was incredible. You're in there with someone so talented, it's so easy to kind of just feed off them and work around stuff. But I was proud of that match, I think.
Absolutely. And another kind of highlight from last year, once again, Pro Wrestling Need. We spoke about the 2024 Multiverse Rumble, but the 2023 one was good fun as well, wasn't it? We mentioned Nina, but I know that Nina reprised her right to censor gimmick this year alongside Martina, of all people. I don't know whether Martina would get in the official right to censor, but she did this year, and there you are alongside Martina. Did she play Kaza G herself from all them years ago last year, and Rio there as Captain Jack or something. But that looked like a ton of fun. And there you are again as Nina Samuels, with the little hat, of course.
Yes. The Multiverse Rumble is such an incredibly fun thing to do for anyone. But to be able to do it as your mates again is just, it's just funny. I can't wait for the next. Is it in January or is he doing another one?
Well, I don't know. Usually they're every January, but they're so popular, he could probably run it every show if he wanted.
Yeah. New company.
Who knows? Who knows? Take us way back now, because what kind of inspired you or motivated you to want to be a pro wrestler to start off with? And kind of what sort of age did you get into your training, first of all, then, Millie?
So I've always been sporty. I've always, been very sporty. I've always had multiple sports on the go at once, and it's quite a boring story, really. Like, one day I just turned on the telly and it was on Sky One. It was Dolph Ziggler versus John Cena on like a SmackDown replay thing, and I just never seen anything like it before, and I just started watching it. And then I series linked it and I just started watching it and got into it that way, and all of a sudden I became obsessed with it. And my dad would take me to the live events, and I didn't realise it was a thing in the UK that you could do. And then around, it would have been 2014, I started Googling places to train, and I was begging my mum. I said, "Mom, please, will you take me in the new year to this place?" And she finally gave in. So when I was 14, I started training in February of 2015, and that was it. As soon as I walked in those doors, she was doomed. That was my future decided. I loved it.
You were hooked. You were absolutely hooked. And I mean, now take us back. Just describe kind of what sort of a wrestler performer you were in them first couple of years. Obviously very young, finding your feet, you know, this big wide world of professional wrestling with these big larger than life characters. What were them? Do you remember what them first couple of years were like for you?
Yeah. So I started training at a place in Coventry called Phoenix. And at the start, I was the only girl, and I was thrown into an environment that was full of middle-aged blokes. And obviously me and my mum, walking this room, I was petrified. I was so nervous. And there's just loads of big, muscly, tattooed blokes for the wrestling. I was yeah, bless them. They were all lovely and they all looked out for me so much, but it was just such a daunting environment at first. But when I got to know them, obviously I became comfortable and I was fine. I think I kind of got on well with the training at the start because I'd always been so sporty. I was fit. I was quite strong. And I remember the first thing we ever did was learning to lock up. And I just feel like those people really, really looked out for me. And there's Kieran, there's Tom, Mark, Steve, all of them really looked out for me. And I love seeing them when I do, because I'm still mates with all of them now. But I only stayed there for maybe a year and a half. And then I started to branch out to other places.
Yeah. Yeah. And you said you're very sporty, a big wrestling fan, kind of hooked as soon as you went through them doors. But was you quite a natural in the ring? Did you kind of take to it quite easily with the lockups and the bumps and hitting the ropes? How was that sort of thing early on?
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think I did take to it well. The thing I struggled with was selling and making noise because I was just so quiet and so shy. And maybe when I was hitting people, I wouldn't be convincing because my arm was about like this thin. So that was something I really, really struggled with, like getting my confidence up. And I'll never, ever forget the fear of that first show. Oh my God, I was like gagging backstage. It was horrible. Oh,
there we go. And some of the, I mean, going through your kind of history books and some of your matches, you know, some of the names that jumped out 2016 and 2017, the likes of Lana Austin, who you had a number of matches with, Bea Priestley, Kat Von Cage, Alex Windsor, Danny Luna, Zaya Brookside. Now, a lot of those doing some wonderful things, both domestically and internationally now, just like yourself and people you've come up in the business with. You know, some of the names that have been there with you almost, you know, from their day one as well.
Yeah, it's great. It is great seeing how well everyone is doing now. Like the amount of matches with Danny Luna we had in front of maybe three people.
Wow.
But it's funny because when I wrestled her recently, I wrestled her at Chaos and we were main event, and I'd like to think it was a match that was of a good standard. I enjoyed it. I think she enjoyed it. Everyone said it was fun. I swear we literally had that match, obviously, hopefully not to the same standard, 5 years ago in front of three people, just germaning people, like, no selling, getting up, firing up. And obviously why we did that, I don't know, in like a little boxing ring in Hereford. But it's just great to see her doing so well now. And everyone really, obviously Bee's, she's a superstar now and she's doing incredible. And it's just great.
Absolutely. And one person I want to bring up that you kind of really had a connection with and really, you know, possibly a lifelong friendship with is this guy here, Chris Brooks, Brooksy. Both looking very happy to be on camera there for sure. And there we go. Is that a kid like us or is that Millie McKenzie under a mask? Who knows? But to me, Brooks has done some incredible things, not just over here in the UK, but the last few years over in Japan, DDT and everything else he's doing. I don't know if you still keep in touch with Chris Brooks, but I mean, them early days and your friendship when he was over here was pretty special, wasn't it?
Yeah. Again, I've got a lot to thank Chris for. Again, in and outside the ring, I think hanging around with these people that I'd looked up to for so long, it's such a, you know, when you meet your idols, you don't want them to be horrible.
Yeah.
Like, you obviously idolize them so much, you want them to be lovely. And he is just, his brain is fascinating. I don't know how, like, how much you've spoke with him or if you've even, like, friends with him or whatever, but just his brain for wrestling. He is just made to wrestle. Like, that is his purpose. Everything about his brain is wrestling. It's just incredible. He's so switched on with merchandise and just the whole wrestling as a brand, not just a sport. He's just incredible.
Yeah, you hear these people that have a wrestling brain that are just kind of made for this sport and understand all the aspects of the business. I think you kind of worked with Chris Brooks in Attack Pro Wrestling and Defiant, and sticking with Defiant because you were their champion, their women's champion, the Defiant women's champion. Now, I'm going to have to check my notes here. 2018, when you was the women's Defiant champion, you had matches against Zaya Brookside, Roxy, Bea Priestley again, and your series of matches against Kaylee Ray. Thinking back to your run with Defiant, fond memories, because I think that's also the place in the company where you came onto a lot of people's radar for the first time as well.
Yeah, it always upsets me with Defiant because I look back at it and I think I didn't appreciate how much they did for me at the time I was there, because it was a time with my wrestling when I just get so stressed about wrestling. I feel that it was just those few years just flew by, and looking back on it, I had such a good time there, and the opportunities they gave me to wrestle Kaylee all the time every week was just incredible. Like, to have that opportunity now, well, look where she is. She's obviously doing great, good for her. But it was just because I was so nervous and so unconfident in myself as a person at that time, I feel if it was now, I'd appreciate it more, because I was so nervous at the time, it just flew by. But looking back on it, it's always fond memories. But I know now I'd enjoy it way more because I wouldn't be as stressed and I'm happier and more chilled and relaxed.
Yeah. Would you have been in NXT UK together, or had she already gone over to the States by then?
Yeah, so she was I don't think she was the first stint I did with NXT UK. I don't think she was there, but the second stint she was there. Yeah, she was there, and I got to train with her a lot. And she's just, again, she's another incredible person in and outside of the ring. I've got a lot. I learned a lot from her in those defiant years.
Absolutely. I want to talk a bit more about NXT UK a little bit later on, but one match in particular, and we haven't spoke a lot about progress, but thinking back to September 2018 and Hello Wembley, a history-making show on the UK scene, about 4,500 fans packed in Wembley Arena. I had Eddie Dennis on the show last week. We were talking about the TLC match he had with Mark Andrews, which will go down in history. But I'll flash up that image again, yourself and the then former Progress Women's World Champion Ginny and Toni Storm. You look at what Toni Storm's doing nowadays, absolutely phenomenal stuff. But fond memories of Hello Wembley and that kind of period of time in Progress?
Yeah, it was, again, I forget I've done these things because I actually can't believe it, because I feel I was so nervous when I'd get rid of, I said get rid of one show like I've done it, but when I'd have... the fit, like my brain would think, oh, okay, I've got to wrestle next week, so I can have 3 days of relaxing, then the stress is going to kick back in. And I feel I never actually got chance to kind of soak it all in, because everything happens so quick and so fast. Like now when I say, oh yeah, I've wrestled at Wembley, I think, oh my god, yeah, I actually did do that, like I'm proud of myself. But oh, I remember going out, I think that has to be the one of the most nervous before a match I'd felt, because my parents were there as well. And it was just, oh, incredible to wrestle there, especially as well.
Do you still get nervous or anxious before matches now?
I do, yeah. I do still get nervous, but before I'm talking, like, I don't think I'm an anxious person in general, but that was like a horrific time in my life. Like, I'd be sick. I wouldn't be able to eat on show days. I'd get headaches, like... I think there was actually some sort of chemical imbalance going on in my brain, because I was bad. Like, I remember as soon as I'd be pinned, as soon as that freak out would go, like, there wouldn't be any relief. It'd be, oh, I've got to do it again tomorrow. Even though I would enjoy it, it's just that actual dread, the nerves would be too much. I couldn't handle it. But now I think I'm just so used to the nerves. I just don't get stressed anymore. I think, do you know what? I've got so much stress with things like this.
Yes.
I enjoy myself. Wrestling's meant to be fun, and that's why I do it, because it's fun. So,
yeah, and I suppose you remember the fun times more than the stressful times, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I was my own worst enemy, because I was the only person stressing myself out. But I look back on it now and think, oh, I wish I'd have just enjoyed it more, because it was incredible. And the scene then was so mad. Like, it was just wrestling incredible people every weekend. I know I still am now, but it was just... you know what that time was like. It was that big boom, and it was just fantastic for everyone.
Absolutely. Speaking of the big boom, and one person that definitely capitalised or kind of came out the other end as a massive, massive star of the big boom of Brit Rest was this guy here. The Bruiserweight, Pete Dunne. And we're going to bring up some fun pictures here, because similar to Chris Brooks, he's another kind of one that's inspired you, that's motivated you, a good friend, doing some wonderful things in WWE. So, so proud of him. Really want him to get his WrestleMania moment this year. But there you are. Look at Pete Dunne looking as happy as ever, I've got to say. But tell us a bit about your relationship with Pete Dunne, because you obviously from, you know, the same neck of the woods from the Midlands, possibly the West Midlands, and I'm guessing that he's kind of somebody that's been, you know, a huge supporter and influence to you throughout your career.
Yeah, so Pete trained me, and that's how we became close, really. He would train me, because we'd get the train to and from training, so I got to know him. And then one day the fight promoter said, oh, okay, you two are gonna tag together. And obviously we didn't really know, well, I had no idea what the dynamic would be. And he just went, just be how it is normally. Like, he hates me. I irritate him. That's how it is. I think all the tag matches, all the tag teams, like me and Charlie, me and Pete, the reason it's quite successful is because it's just organic. Like, it's just so natural. I feel in and outside the ring, there's no acting. It is just, that is how it is. I swear Pete just pretends to hate me, and I just wind him up as much as I can, but I hope deep down he likes me, really.
Like the annoying little sister.
Yes, yeah. But that first tag match we had, where we won the Revolver Tag Team Championships, that was just again, that was Sammy's promotion, who was my favourite. And it was just, again, I don't think anyone thought we would win the championship, including myself. It was just, again, that was when we figured out the dynamic of the team. Like, obviously, nothing was planned. It was just, okay, we just see how it's going to go. And I think to have that much chemistry, it was like a little story ongoing through the match. And it's just, it was that match has to be maybe one of my top three for fondest memories.
Yeah, I want to talk about NXT UK in a minute, but I was absolutely astounded going through your matches, how busy your 2019 was. Now, I'm going to reel off a bit of a list here. This might take me a minute or so, but you started the year over in Japan for Tokyo Joshi Pro and Sendai Girls. You defended your Sendai Girls junior title over here in the UK against Charlie Evans. You headed back over to Japan in the April to defend your junior title once again. You flew out to Australia on a couple of occasions in April and May. You flew back to Japan for Sendai Girls for another month in June, where you picked up the tag titles alongside Charlie. You had a fantastic run in the EVE for EVE in their number one contenders tournament, getting to the final. You head back over to Japan in October. You were winning the She One for Pro Wrestling EVE in November 2019. You finished the year by winning the Women of Cult title over in Germany, and all of that while wrestling your dates over in the UK and the rest of Europe. And this was 2019 in a bit of a nutshell. You were kind of globetrotting absolutely everywhere between Australia, the UK, Japan, Germany. You mentioned earlier, but, you know, being kind of the hotbed was the UK scene kind of in the mid-2010s up to 2019. And you were kind of absolutely everywhere towards the end of that decade.
Yeah. I'm tired just listening.
Mind-blowing.
I remember like that time, I swear, in 1 week, because I was in Australia and I came back to the UK for 4 days and then went back to Australia. I was there for a week and then I flew to Japan. I swear, in that week, I did 50,000 miles.
What?
Which was ridiculous. Crazy. And the thought of that now, obviously I'd love to do it again, but the thought of it, oh, I'd need about a month's rest now. I'm old, cracking on a bit now. No, 23. Ooh, those aches and pains coming in. But no, it was insane. Like, to be able to travel, I love traveling. I love meeting new people as well as wrestling. Obviously, I'm lucky to be able to wrestle in these countries, but the main thing I appreciate is just being able to travel and meet new people and experience different countries, cultures. Of course, that was hard to say. And Australia is somewhere I've always wanted to go, and my parents got married there, and it was just the friends I've made there are friends I'll have for life, and I can't wait, hopefully, to go back soon if this wrist ever heals.
I'm sure it will. But let me ask you, how did you first appear on WWE's radar?
I remember, I assume it was Pete. Thanks, Pete, for helping me out there. Because obviously I used to train with him and tag with him. I think he spoke to Jim Smallman about putting me forward. And then he came to training and watched some stuff. And obviously I was friends with Jim Free Progress. And then, yeah, I just got an email from them. And they invited me down to do some shows for them. So I did, I can't remember if it was two or three sets of tapings.
You did Cambridge and Birmingham, didn't you, in 2018?
Yeah, but I was at the Liverpool one, but I was injured, and that was another tricky stage in my life. But they I was very grateful that they offered me a contract at that age, but it was not the right time for me to sign with them at all. I was still, I was 18. I was a kid. I had no idea what I was doing in life. I needed to travel. I wanted to travel to improve my confidence as a person and to get over this dread of wrestling that I had, just this anxiety. So I'm glad I got over that. And I'm glad that I was able to travel, experience the world, build my connections with Japan, and then to come back and work for WWE. It was a nice full circle moment again.
Absolutely, because I think you did eventually sign with them in 2021. So obviously you got a bit of a 3-year gap there. But as you just explained, you used that 3 years to travel the world, discover who you are, build that confidence, and come back a more mature and more accomplished performer all round. Yeah. Where WWE, you're in a better position for signing with WWE in 2021 as opposed to 3 years earlier, weren't you?
Yeah, I was definitely more mature. I don't know, debatable. But I had my head. I was a bit more level and stable, I think is the most sensible term for it. I'd grown up and I thought, right, I've had my fun now. It's time to actually earn some money and settle down a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to bring up some pictures that might bring back memories of your time in a WWE ring there. I think your first match back was teaming with Mako, wasn't it? And yeah. Possibly this match here against Isla Dawn and Kaylee Ray. And so, like I say, your opportunity to reconnect once again with Mako. There always seems to be these kind of moments in your career where you're kind of bumping into and reconnecting with Mako. But teaming with her on your kind of return match in 2021 after just getting signed, another special moment for you.
Yeah, I swear all these moments I have, they put so much pressure on me. The first thing I had to do there was a promo. Why? They know what I'm literally, look at me. Do you think I can speak? I've got the memory of a fish. I'm all over the place. So I was so nervous about that. And then when I got that out of the way, to be able to tag with Mako again, it was nice to have someone I knew outside the ring and before there, but it was added pressure because I didn't want to let her down. But again, that match, the people in that match, it was just, I was very lucky to be in the match and I enjoyed it when the stress was out the way. Had
absolutely
a nice
shirt
after.
Going to bring up some more pictures here and some of the matches you had. I think Isla Dawn, Nina Samuels, and Bobby Turner, Stevie Turner, sorry, my apologies. And, some of the matches you had there, I think that's Amel. And it looked like you were having a ton of fun in the NXT UK, in the WWE ring, getting your hand raised there by Tom Scarborough, of course. What are some of your favourite memories from your time in NXT UK? And I think you were there, solidly for that year or two up until they closed the doors in 2022. What are some of your fondest memories?
That period of my life was incredible. It was like, the way I describe it to people is, I say, when you get older and you're an adult and like you have all these friends, but you're always busy and you can't see them. It was like for every 4 weeks, we would have 2 weeks in London and it was just like a school trip. Like, you're with your mates, you're all staying in this hotel, everyone's in the hotel, your friends are on the same corridor as you. And it was just people like B Priestley that I'd been friends with for years, but she'd lived in Japan and not, I'd been all over, and we just never really got a chance to see each other. So to be stuck with each other for 2 weeks in an environment like that, oh, the friends I've made there, I will never, ever, ever like forget. And I still speak to them all now and see them. It's just, it was like a little family. And I'm so lucky that I got to be there at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned about, the first thing they got you to do when you signed was do a promo. But you seem to handle some of your microphone work really, really well. And, quite confident, you came across really, really well. And a lot of fun in some of your backstage segments. Mm-hmm. And there was B Priestley there, you alongside Mako. I'm guessing that you probably weren't as comfortable in the beginning, but probably you became a lot more confident and started to enjoy the process of working behind the microphone, doing them promos eventually, didn't you?
Yeah, like, it's funny because that last photo you put in of me being Mako, that promo took us about 45 minutes to film purely because B was laughing, I was laughing, then we finally stopped laughing, then Mako started laughing. Oh god, it's a nightmare. Yeah, I don't mind talking, like I'm happy to talk. It's just, as a person, as you can probably tell, I'm all over the place. I get my words mixed up. I get distracted. So I think when I have to try and be serious, I sometimes struggle. Like, I think, oh God, I'm just all over the place. But now I think people just know what I'm like and they expect me just to be all over the place. I think when you know me, you kind of expect some sort of mishmash, but hopefully we get to the point in the end.
some sort of randomness, eh? But yeah. Now I mentioned earlier that I had the pleasure of kind of working with you at the Spinebuster tapings and a few occasions at Southwest Wrestling as well. Always great to bump into backstage. And of course, I'm always there with my backstage interview set, waiting to interview people. And hand on heart, you've been one of the easiest talents to work with as far as doing the backstage promos, because as soon as you finish your match, it's like, right, Jonas, do you want to do this interview? Should we do the promo now? Usually I'm waiting 15, 20 minutes, half an hour. I'm missing all the matches. Don't know what I'm talking about when the talents come through the door for their interviews. But for you, it's boom, right, let's get it done. And like I say, take my hat off to you for being such a pro when it comes to doing these promos with me. Thank you.
Thank you. Said you're great to work with. Sorry this took 45 years to arrange, thanks to my lack of organisation. I do apologise, everyone.
No, that's all right. These things happen. But sticking with WWE, final question on the WWE subject. And you mentioned about being a massive fan of Dean Ambrose, John Moxley, and getting to meet him at Wolverhampton for their 9th anniversary show, for OTT's 9th anniversary show. When you were signed to WWE, did you have to kind of pinch yourself and think, you know, being a massive fan, being front row of my Dean Ambrose t-shirt, my Dean Ambrose sign, and him handing me his t-shirt, and then finally I'm working for the same company that he was all them years ago. Did you have any like pinch yourself moments like that, where it's like, yeah, you know, this is the big time?
Yeah, I did. Like meeting Triple H and things like that, meeting Triple H and Shawn Michaels, that was a bit like, okay, this is real now. But I think because the majority of my NXT UK career was during COVID, we were wrestling in front of no one or very, very small crowds. So it maybe didn't feel as big as it was, as big as an achievement as it should have been for me, because it wasn't as stressful because there was no crowd there. It was just like training. And yeah, we'd had training prior, wrestling people. So we were so in the routine of wrestling, like, whereas the Wembley show, for example, that was such a massive thing. And I feel that obviously WWE is a massive company and Progress is still big, but WWE is obviously the top wrestling company in the world.
Yeah.
So I feel maybe if the COVID hadn't have happened, thanks COVID, it would have been a bigger milestone in my head, although I still enjoyed it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And of course, there's all these rumours and rumblings about NXT Europe. And if that ever gets off the ground and they came calling, would you be interested again?
I think anyone would be stupid to say no.
Yeah.
A small trip in Europe this time, boom, I'll be there. No, obviously I'll be grateful. Hopefully the door's not closed. Like, hopefully one day we may cross paths again. I'll be grateful. But yeah, I had such a good time with WWE. I feel that, again, now I've grown as a person and I feel I'm more mature than I was. Again, I keep just growing. I feel that I'd like to go and prove myself one more time if I get that opportunity.
I'm sure you will. They'll be silly not to give you that opportunity one more time. Now, I mentioned a few people that were kind of, I believe, interlinked in your career over the years. We mentioned Chris Brooks and Pete Dunne earlier, but another one has to be Martina. And I think that one of the first times I ever saw you was in Birmingham when Progress were there, Chapter 86 from the O2 Academy in Birmingham. You were Martina's tag team partner. And that was really, really good. But I think Martina is almost like your wrestling mum. And I think she'd probably describe you as one of her 86 children anyway. Yeah. But I mean, one of the things, you know, that backstage promo you did with the umbrella was just absolutely hilarious. I watched that about a dozen times, wet myself laughing. Absolutely crazy. But some of the fun that you've had with Martina over the years. And like I say, she's another one of these people that's been fundamental and quite influential on your career, hasn't she?
Yeah, she's just a laugh. Again, I feel that dynamic just works so well, because in and out the ring it's just the same. Like, I am a mini her outside of the ring, and obviously sometimes inside the ring, and she's just so much fun to work with, and she's always having a laugh, and it's just, I like being happy. I like, you know, light-hearted entertainment. That's my favorite kind of thing. I think because I was so stressed, like I was saying, for so many years, I didn't enjoy it. Now I've changed my mindset to work with people like her. It's just like, do you know what? Just have a laugh. No one cares. Just enjoy yourself.
Absolutely. And we love Martina on the show. She was a guest back in November, a wonderful guest. And we mentioned her earlier, but Charlie Evans, a great friend of yours. And I know that you probably haven't worked together for a little while as one half of the Medusa Complex. You had that success over in Japan. You even defended your Sendai tag titles over here in the UK at one point. There you are with the tag titles. But another one of those people that will be a friend for life and somebody that's been important to your career.
Yeah. It gets me emotional, this one, because as I said, Charlie was around. I basically lived with her while she was in the UK, and I was so young. I was like 17, 18, and I really, really did look up to her in more ways than she probably knows now. So to be able to tag with her and just watch her grow up and become this happy little thing she is now, like through the times when we both weren't having a particularly good time, it's so nice to see her finally, like, in, not that she wasn't in her element then, obviously she was incredible in the ring then, but now, like, inside and outside the ring, happy. And I'm just so lucky that I get to tag with her and call her one of my best friends. I really am.
Absolutely. And the final person I want to bring up, I know we mentioned her earlier, but Bea Priestley. There you are. But good friends. She's doing amazing things over in the States as well, doing some incredible things over in the States. But she's had a wonderful career, and another person that's meant a lot to you.
Yeah, she's, again, me and Bea, we speak to each other the same as Evie. Every week we'll have a FaceTime call and update each other, and hopefully I'll get over to see her this year, because I've still never been to America. I don't know how I haven't done that yet. I was going to go, and then COVID stopped it. So I've said, B, now you're there, I've got no excuse. I will come and see you. So okay. Yeah, she's doing incredible. That's
her. Once you've got your arm fixed, she's got to put a good word in for you and get you over there for a couple of tryout matches. Absolutely. I've got a couple more pictures to bring up, and you'll have to add a bit of context to this, because I'm not sure what show, what company, but we got you and Rio, the current Progress world champion, and some sort of Hardy Boys gimmick there by the looks of it. And I've got to say, you pull off Jeff Hardy pretty well, I've got to say. Tell us a bit about that. That looks like a ton of fun.
Yeah, that was Modern Nomad at the Bread Shed in Manchester. Yeah, that was a good time. Again, inside and outside the ring, that was a happy time in my life. And Rio is just she's the most positive person ever. Well, you know what she's like. Inside and outside the ring, again, she's just a bundle of joy. And to wrestle her, it was just fun. We're having a right laugh.
Absolutely. As we start to wind down this fantastic interview with Millie McKenzie, let us know what are some of your proudest moments, your proudest and biggest achievements, or the start of the question asking proudest moments of your career so far. That's what, 8-9 years on now. So any standout moments that you could kind of really look back on, hang your hat on and say, yeah, I did that.
I think, as I said, the main thing for me would be overcoming that fear of dread that I had, because it was so bad. Like, I would literally make myself ill, like, not obviously intentionally. I would just be so nervous and put myself under so much pressure. I think the fact that, obviously, I still do get nervous now, but it's just healthy nerves now. It's not like, oh god, I can't eat, like, I'll have a cheeseburger right before I wrestle now. Like, I think overcoming that fear of dread, and when some negative stuff was happening, to get over that and to enjoy it again. I think, do you know what? I'm proud of myself there, because I never, ever would have thought that I'd have got back to this stage. And I also think meeting the people I have in wrestling, and those friends now, they're not even wrestling friends, they're my real life friends, and traveling the places that I've traveled to. I'm just so lucky that I've been able to make those connections. And wrestling is my whole life, really. It's shaped who I am, and it's shaped, well, I am still doing it. It's my life, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm so grateful for...
Oh, I think we've momentarily lost. We got it back. A little bit of a blip there. That's all right. No. But tell me, you were saying, you know, that it shaped your life and it's made you into the person you are today. I think that the main thing at the moment is we got to get your arm fixed. and get you back in the ring as soon as possible. But the sooner that happens, the better. But so usually what I like to do towards the end of the interview is ask you about your socials and where we can reach out to you, where we can find out more about Millie McKenzie on X or Instagram, Facebook. Now, usually I would have a little ticker running along the bottom. I've neglected to do that on this occasion, but please go ahead. The floor is yours. Where can we find out more about Millie McKenzie?
I'm rubbish at social media. I think my Twitter or X, whatever it's called, and Instagram is M McKenzie WWE. Still, probably should change that actually. Whoops. Pretty much that on everything, to be honest. You'll find
That's
me.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. But Millie McKenzie, you've been an awesome guest. We finally got it done after a few months of back and forth, but we finally got it done, episode 353. Millie McKenzie, you've been an awesome guest. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.